This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to episode 95 of the Observe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com. Just five to go now to our 100th episode, which we should see sometime next month. This show is the one all about the three R's, reversals, regressions, and retractions, and we'll get into why we got that picked as kind of what this episode's all about here in a minute. But if you're remotely connected to the internet and social media and gaming, you know exactly what this show's going to have a huge focus on. I want to remind everybody as we get kicked off, though, that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's there, so please check out techpodcast.com. Okay, real quick mention about a giveaway we started this week before we get into the heavier news. We are giving away an Xbox 360 wireless speed wheel. All you got to do is visit the blog post, which I've got posted. I'll have a link on the show page for it. There's some text that you have to tweet, and of course you're required to be following me at WinOBS on Twitter, and it will get you entered automatically. And then in July we will draw the winner out for that, and it'll be actually through the website that we're hosting the giveaway on. They do it automatically. So if you're interested in putting your hands on an Xbox 360 wireless speed wheel, please go check that post out and please enter. All right. Another little tidbit before we dive into stuff is that I got a great treat this week. I got invited by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Center social media team to attend the grand opening of the Atlantis exhibit at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Center at Cape Canaveral next Saturday, a week from this Saturday. So I'm going to be there as part of a large social media group covering it from all different perspectives. So expect a lot of Twitter activity, pictures, video sharing, and all that kind of stuff, because it is going to be a terrific day. And based on the previews of pictures I've seen of Atlantis inside the exhibit, it is absolutely going to be a stunning view, because they've made it where it's so close you can almost reach out and touch it. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. It'll be another great reason for me to climb on the Harley and head south for the two and a half hour drive to Kennedy, and then we'll spend the day there and then look for all that information to follow up that weekend. All right, so let's talk a little bit about how the week started before we jump to yesterday. You know, we still had the kind of status quo of what happened last week at E3, the reaction that occurred to the Xbox One announcements relating to the always-on requirement, or the one-time every 24-hour connection, as well as the used games and DRM issues that we had heard where Microsoft stood. They may not have communicated it very well, but that was their policies, and that's what was published. Last week, I did talk a little bit about on the website about how PS4 seemed to be edging out Xbox One in pre-orders. But this week, it did shuffle back a little bit, and Xbox One took over on the U.S. Amazon site, took over the first spot from PS4. But since last week, PS4's added several launch day bundles. They come with games and stuff like that. So a lot of them are in the top 10. So, you know, if you add it all together, you might be looking at the fact that PS4 was still leading Xbox One in pre-orders just on Amazon. Now, that's based on the reaction that everybody had to the announcements that Microsoft made, and then, of course, the subsequent announcements that were made Monday night last week at Sony's PS4 E3 conference. So we all know about that. We talked about it heavily last week in our special episode 93, and then we mentioned a little bit more about it in episode 94 when we recorded that on Thursday. So kind of the status quo this week. There was a story from GeekWire that confirmed that Microsoft said you can tether your phone to your Xbox One to do your check-ins every day, so it would be easy enough to do if you did not have a standard everyday internet connection. You could possibly use your phone for that connection and get the file. I did mention last Thursday how I wasn't real thrilled with the response Don Matrick gave when asked, you know, what do you do if you don't have a constant internet connection? And his response was, well, we have a machine that can handle that. It's called the Xbox 360. And I wasn't real thrilled about the fact that he was recommending an 8-year-old console as the secondary prize to not being able to have a connection for the Xbox One. Then on Twitter, had a U.S. Air Force guy who's stationed in Japan hit me up on Twitter about a little blog post he wrote. And, he had a good point. You know, a lot of people have been having this argument over the Xbox One connectivity requirement and talking about the military and how that impacts the military. Well, many of you know I spent 30 years in the Navy. I've been deployed around the world, and I've been on the ground in several different places around the world. And the reality is, and this is what my friend from Japan, the Air Force guy, was saying too, is the reality is most of us in the military have a decent connection to the internet somehow, some way. Now, there are exceptions to this. Obviously, if you're in a combat situation, you're not going to have that. You're also not going to be dragging around an Xbox 360 or an Xbox One with you. If you're deployed on board a U.S. naval ship, I've been deployed on a few of them before. Wi-Fi is not as freely available on there. In fact, it's not available. So, that's a problem. And I can remember in my squadron, we used to have Xbox 360s and PS3s in different workshops. We never connected them online. We simply stuck the disc in, and that's what was used to play the game. So, yeah, there will be some situations that there would have been some challenges, but a good majority of military people around the world have access to free Wi-Fi or connectivity that would allow them to get that check-in done when they wanted to be able to play online or play offline single-player games. So my friend's response was that, you know, there's a bit of an overreaction labeling this as an affront to the military. Would it have impacted some people? Yes. Just like it would have impacted some people. You know, I went out on a job today to troubleshoot a computer issue for someone, and they're on dial-up because there's no other option in their neighborhood. And the reality of the world is there's still a lot of people on dial-up in remote and rural areas, as well as, you know, that just they simply choose to go that route because of cost. So there were going to be issues with the connectivity thing, no doubt, but I'm sure it would have been means to be worked around as well. Like, you know, I remember reading somewhere last week that the file was very small, 100 kilobits. You could easily, you know, access that file, download it, and, you know, put it on your console via USB maybe, and you would be taken care of. But as we now know what happened yesterday, we're never going to get a chance to see that most likely. Because there was a complete reversal on a couple key elements of the policies that were announced at E3 by Microsoft on the Xbox One console. First off, one, the connectivity requirement is going to be dropped. There will be no need to be online once every 24 hours to validate the console and to make offline gaming possible. Two, they also have lifted some of the DRM restrictions when it comes to used games. The best way I can describe what the changes mean is think of your Xbox 360 today. All right? You can buy a disc. You can install it to your hard drive on your console, but you still got to have the disc in your computer in the console's drive to play it, right? Well, that's going to be the case with Xbox One now. You can still download digital games from the Xbox Live Marketplace. You can still do that on the Xbox One. But now, because there won't be any of that, the 24-hour DRM check-in, you will be unable to share those because the family share plan is going to go away. Because without that daily check, there's no way to validate that game is only installed on one console. So as much as people are celebrating, and as I put it in my post about it, doing their happy dance about Microsoft backing off on these two things, it also has had a secondary impact. And that is that it is going to turn around on some of the innovations, some of the new features Microsoft was bringing to Xbox One for the future that incorporated digital game downloads that could be shared amongst your family that you could access from any Xbox One console that you go visit because it's in the cloud. All of those unique and innovative features are history. unless, you know, the possibility exists that they figure out a way to do some kind of an opt-in so that you have the ability, if you have a constant on connection and you don't have a problem with a 24-hour check-in, that you would be able to use those features. Now, we haven't heard anything else about that. The post from yesterday stands as it is. There was one message that came out late yesterday that came from Mark Whitten, I think he's the Xbox Live guy, and he did confirm that, yes, there will not be a need for a 24-hour check-in online. However, when you first set up Xbox One, you have to have a connection. And that goes for a lot of electronics. Like TiVo, you got to have a connection the first time you get connected and set it up, back in the days that it was on a telephone line. So, I think it's starting to fall out. Last night, more and more posts were going up online talking about the detractor elements of this change that's going to reverse some of the innovative features that we were looking at and seeing coming, like family sharing. No need to have a disk in a drive to play a game because you install it to your console. It's then available through the cloud, and you don't have to have a disk in. That means you could play that game on any console because your proof of ownership is there with that daily check-in. So we will continue to watch this and see what happens. There was a great story by Todd Bishop from GeekWire that he titled Xbox One, Microsoft scores points for their flexibility, but they lose some credibility. And that was kind of a general theme. Of course, it was a big joke on Twitter, Xbox 180, Xbox Flashback, Xbox 361. I mean, there's Microsoft is in a lose-lose here, because by changing the policies, they have to back off of their future thought processes when it comes to this console, because it's going to revert them. And in fact, it's going to be a lot like owning an Xbox 360 these days, because you can sell your used games in order to because once you sell it, you don't have it on your drive, and you're even if it's still installed without the disk, you can't play it. So that is validating that it's only installed on one computer or one console to be played on, and digital downloads won't be able to be shared amongst anything. And I even threw up the question on Twitter, what does this mean about Xbox Live? Does that now mean that it's per console still, or is that going to change back to being per user? We haven't heard anything specific about that. Now, they didn't help themselves, and this has been discussed a lot, on the messaging side, such as that buy an Xbox 360 if you don't have a daily connection that Don Matrick said last week. So messaging, they had some innovative ideas, and Todd's piece in GeekWire approaches that and talks about that. But so messaging could have been better to help get the word out. Now, they were behind the eight ball when it started, because that night Sony went up with their conference and basically 180'd on anything that they may or may not have been ready to do because of what Microsoft had put out. So when Microsoft stepped forward, Sony did exactly the opposite, and they won a lot of fans for that. The long-term cost will be the lack of innovation, as I talked about. There's a lot of people out there now calling the Xbox One a souped-up Xbox 360 because the cloud features, such as sharing, the requirement to not have a disk in the drive, are now history, or at least for now, it appears they are complete and utter history. Like I said, there's a lot of people seem to think it would be feasible to implement an opt-in program, that if you have a constant on connection, that you could opt into these features without having to, you know, lose those abilities. So we'll see where that goes. Mary Jo Foley wrote a great post yesterday on All About Microsoft. She's not a big gamer, doesn't cover big gaming things, but her perspective was Microsoft listening, because you know that next week we get Windows 8.1 coming out during build in San Francisco. And that's a major step towards correcting some issues with Windows 8 that has been mentioned by the community, by the people using Windows 8. And so Microsoft listened, is perceived as listening, and are making those changes. And now they're being seen to be doing the same thing on the Xbox 360 side. So please go check out her story about that, because she really addresses that across a lot of levels. Now, just before I sat down to record this show, there was a tweet from Steven Sanofsky, who is the former Windows guy for Microsoft, who's now out on his own doing his own thing, teaching school and stuff. But he referenced a Pastebin post that from a supposed Microsoft employee that was labeled heartbreaking Microsoft employee, talks about the Xbox One changes yesterday. Now, I've had some people pop up on Twitter and say that it can't be accurate because they are reflecting some changes, or they're reflecting the sharing program as being a limited demo type thing. I don't know which way to go on that, but the bottom line is this person shared their reactions to those changes and how it's made an impact on the work they've put into getting there. And again, it certainly sounds right. The message sounds right for the most part. And to have Stephen Sanofsky share it, I imagine that, you know, he does not willy-nilly share things that he wouldn't find some validity to. So, and the reason he shared it was to talk about the passion of the individual talking about the product. All right. However, all of this aside, all of this has happened. It still didn't change the fact that MPD came out with their main numbers. And once again, for 29 straight months, the Xbox 360 has remained the top U.S. console for almost, it'll be 30 months next month in July. Now, there were a lot of stories that came out and put the Nintendo DS on top of the Xbox 360 console, but the Nintendo DS is a handheld gaming system, not a console. So I think that was just a, you know, a SEO, get me clicks on my title kind of thing for a lot of those websites. But 29 months on top Xbox 360, so as you know, as popular as it continues to be, hopefully that will carry over some with the Xbox One. But like I said last week, a lot of people may choose to not make this purchase right away. All right, so Xbox One, lots of back and forth, lots of moving forward, taking steps backwards. As I said last Thursday on episode 94, I think we are still in to see a significant amount of information about this console, how it's going to be implemented, what they do and don't do with it. And so I think we got to continue to just kind of watch, see what they say, see how they talk. Maybe we do get some of the features, maybe we don't. But I do not think, just like I said it last week before all this news broke, I do not think we have heard the end of all of this when it comes to the features, the connectivity, the DRM, used games, etc., etc., etc. So we'll keep listening, we'll keep watching. So moving on to some other Microsoft and tech-related news, wanted to point out to you there's this big, you know, they have the film festival in Cannes, France every year. Well, there's this big advertising convention thing going on in Cannes, France right now. Microsoft Advertising is there, and they posted a blog post about the reaction to Windows 8 ads in the apps, and it's been fairly positive. I think we've mentioned this a few weeks ago as well, but they've released the search results about these new ad formats, and overwhelmingly, customers are reacting positively to them. So, you know, I remember the uproar when people first saw those ads at the very end of the built-in apps in like Bing, finances, sports, news, and things like that. So it's interesting to see the data shows that people aren't reacting to them in the same way that the journalistic press is or the tech press is. Wrote this week about an offer that floated out of Microsoft about for students. And it's like 25 countries this is available in now. It's not a giveaway, but it's a discount on the Surface RT. $199. Now that is $300 cheaper than the baseline 32 gig Surface RT model that you can buy in the Microsoft store. And of course the touch cover costs another $100. So you can add for another $50 to that price a touch cover or another $30 on top of that. So a total of $280 for a type cover on the Surface RT 32 gig model. Now the key to this offer is the institution has to order the devices. Now a lot of people were saying this isn't for students, just an individual student can't buy it. If I was an individual student at a school, I would get this form, I would take it to my tech department or somebody in the leadership administration of my school and say, look, this is being offered, can't we do something here where we can all sign up, pay for ours, get them, you order them. And because it has to be done with a purchase order or something like that, I think it's very doable. But some enterprising students out there have got to, and it's good until, I think, August. So enterprising students, you need to go look at this story, grab the form, take the brochure to your school leadership or your school administrators or IT staff and make that proposal that they look at an option and a way to make that available to the students to purchase so that everybody prepays, the school has their money, they pay with the purchase order, and everybody gets a Surface RT for $200. It's an excellent deal. I bought my Surface RT last November, so I'm not, you know, what is it? July, August, September, October, November. I'm 7 months into owning my Surface RT, and they're already selling for, in some situations, for $100, and then this one for $200 to students. So it's an excellent deal. You definitely want to go check it out and see if you can't get your school on board with doing it. I think it's a great opportunity for folks to get that. There is a new post from Paul Thurrott on, let me grab this, get the right device working here. From Paul Thurrott, some more news about Office and Outlook 2013 RT. As you know, next week during build, we get the preview of Windows 8.1, or what used to be known as Windows Blue. And it's going to have a lot of new features in it, a lot of changes to the operating system that we've already talked about and you've already seen on the web. And we also heard a week or two ago that Outlook RT was coming in this update for Surface RT. So we are definitely getting that. But what Paul points out is the installation media that he was given to test Outlook RT actually contains ARM compatible versions of all the Microsoft Office programs: Access, Excel, InfoPath, OneNote, Outlook, PowerPoint, Publisher, SharePoint Designer, SkyDrive Pro, Visio Word, and others. So Microsoft has already got a full-blown version of Microsoft Office ready to run on ARM-based devices like the Surface RT. And he wonders if that means we're going to see more of that, or could they feasibly be coming out in total. We already know they're giving away the basic versions of Office on any device 10 inches or less running Windows 8. So is it feasible that we could go full-blown Office on RT? Very possible. But I'm really excited. If none of the others come, having Office Outlook RT on my Surface RT is going to be a huge plus. I think I said this last week or the week before. The Mail app is good for check-in, but it's not good for productivity type work, and I'm looking forward to being able to work in Outlook on my Surface RT when I'm moving about and traveling. Relating to email and stuff like that, Microsoft also announced this week that they are going to cease supporting linked accounts in late July, and everything will be moved over to aliases. Now, we already know that when Microsoft came out with the two-factor authentication, we were told the two-factor authentication was not compatible with linked accounts, so we had to unlink accounts in order to implement two-factor authentication for our Microsoft account. So that's already kind of one step in the direction that this is heading. But basically what this means, you may have created multiple accounts in order to have different email addresses at Outlook.com, Live.com, Hotmail.com, whatever it is. Well, what this does is those won't be their own accounts with their own logins. They'll be converted into aliases, and they will all go underneath of your Microsoft account. And that way, you'll still be able to access them. You'll still be able to access the email, send email from that account, or at least look like you're sending email from that account. And so all the features of having them as an individual email account will still be there, but it will all be under the one Microsoft account. That means you have one account login under two-factor authentication. It's much more protected, because what could happen with a linked account is that if somebody was to compromise one of your seldom used linked accounts, they actually could gain access to your primary Microsoft account. And that's certainly, in a security perspective, you don't want that to happen. So it looks like that is why part of the reason like this change is going to happen. Not sure how it's going to be implemented. There's not a lot of info about that, but it is due to come in late July. So I'm imagining we will hear more from the Outlook.com team as we get closer to that point. All right, continuing on with some stuff from Paul Thurrott, some new updates about the upcoming Windows 8.1 update, or Blue. He does a great kind of snapshot into Windows Store 2.0, as he labels it, the new Windows Store that's coming in Windows 8.1, and it is going to be a much more useful, informative store than we currently have, with a lot of just tiles and not a lot of information around the searches and things. So go check that out for the screenshots, and you can see what's coming there. He also did a post about Xbox Music 2.0 and how that's going to be different and how it's going to look different. And I'll tell you, and I'll put links to all these things on the show page, but I'll tell you what I saw in the Xbox Music thing. I'm seeing a lot more on-screen visual clues to help you navigate, whether you're doing it with touch or whether you're doing it with a mouse and keyboard. Whereas opposed, before you might have had to right-click to bring up the app bar or swipe in from the right to get the charms bar. Looks like you're getting a lot more visual cues in Metro modern apps in order to make navigation a little bit easier. Very similar to like the print option they stuck in the PDF reader on Windows 8. So I think they're making the move to kind of try to return some familiarity to these apps and how you navigate, but yet still stick to the modern Metro kind of format as much as possible. All right. A couple references to Mary Jo Foley here on All About Microsoft. This is one I never heard. Microsoft apparently was looking very seriously at buying Nokia. And apparently that is not going to continue on. That discussion is not going to continue on. But this news just kind of broke out. On June 19th, the Wall Street Journal reported that Microsoft had been in advanced talks to buy Nokia. But according to them, the talks broke down and they are unlikely to be resumed. And then, of course, the next day, Wall Street Journal mentions that Huawei might be considering buying Nokia. And I think I saw somebody on Twitter say their stock shot up like 11%. Not sure that that would have been the best policy or the best option. I mean, that's certainly been a rumor for many months when it comes to Microsoft and Nokia and Windows Phone. It kind of everybody assumed that's what was going to happen because Stephen Elop was previously from Microsoft before he went to Nokia. So who knows what would have happened or might have happened, but it certainly does appear now that it is not going to happen. So we can wipe that one off of the monitor list. We don't need to be watching out for that anymore. And then you might remember a Microsoft social website called Socl, S-O-C-L. Well, it's still around, still being kind of worked on by Microsoft Research. And in fact, they released an updated what's called a Blink app for Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 that takes a series of pictures. They've added some new features to the site, done an overhaul of the interface, and of course, it's a very modern Metro-looking interface now. So not sure how many people are on there. I'm not sure what the ultimate goal of this social network is, but it was designed targeting college students and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see where this is going, if it's going anywhere, how it's all tied together, and whether or not this thing just might be something they sell off, or I just don't know. Because unfortunately, as far as social goes, there's already plenty of social networks where we share pictures, share videos, and do other things like that. So I'm not sure, you know, in the long run that Socl is about becoming a full-blown social network. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Lost in the news this week with all the Xbox stuff is the fact that some new and popular apps did come to Windows 8 this week. And in fact, this post came up on Blogging Windows, the official Windows blog, yesterday morning before all this stuff happened yesterday afternoon. And of course, they're getting ready for build next week, so they're starting to kind of get ahead of themselves and talk about a few things. But the apps that were released, one was called Edging, which is kind of a DJing app, and it's got like 2.5 million registered members that mix music and create songs and do all kinds of stuff. So there's that one. There's an app for the Great British Chefs, which is an award-winning recipe site in the UK. That's now come out to Windows 8. Tesco, which is another UK company, Tesco Groceries, now has their Windows 8 app out. And then there's a Timeout app, which is they're an international media group that produces websites, magazines, travel guides, and other apps like that to be guides around the world. And so you can get access to all of Timeout's information on different cities. And then Vivo, which is a video kind of community video editing thing where people at one event can take several different versions of video, upload it to it, share that. Oh, no, I've confused the two of them. The next one is ViClone. That's the one where a group of people can be at one event. They can record video, upload it to this ViClone, and then somebody can pull all that video together and edit it into a single defined video. The Vivo is a music video and music entertainment platform that allows you to get access to HD music videos, original programming, live concerts, from all over the world, and do it right from the home screen. You can search and everything like that. So it's kind of a music video concert app. And then the last one is Where's My Mickey? Disney Studios is bringing a new physics puzzler to Windows 8, and it's supposed to be in the store very soon. So it says that this is the tip of the iceberg. I've read that there are more things to be announced next week at Build that is going to allow them to expose some more things as they get ready to talk to developers next week about developing for the Windows platforms. And, of course, Build is the developer conference, so they talk about developing for Windows 8. They talk about Windows Phone, and they talk about, getting connected on all those platforms. They've made a real effort to connect things and make it easy to bring your app to multiple platforms very easily with the development tools that they got. You very typically see new development tools released at Build, demoed and released. And of course, the other big news that will be tied to Build next week is the fact that we're getting Windows 8.1 preview. So there is no doubt that there'll be a lot of Windows folks without much sleep next week. Another story from ZDNet about Skype. They've now video messaging is available to everyone and all the platforms except for Windows Phone. Now, I'm not sure why. I saw a tweet that said we want to make sure that we got all the features right before we bring it to Windows Phone. But basically what Skype video messaging is an ability for you to go to a Skype on a desktop or if you're on Android or iOS, not Windows Phone app, obviously. And you can record a message that can then be left for somebody, kind of like voicemail, except it's video mail. And you can leave that video message for somebody in their Skype box. And that's what this feature is. And so all the official apps were updated, of course, except for the Windows Phone one. I did hear today on Windows Weekly, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley talking about they wondered if they were holding off on Windows Phone in order to integrate it more fully into the OS, which would mean an OS update, which means who knows when we would get that. But it, you know, a lot of Windows Phone fans very frustrated with the fact that the official platform for Microsoft in the mobile market, Windows Phone, is getting the support last. So we'll see. Another blog from the official Windows Phone blog, we're getting faster and better recognition when it comes to speech on the Windows Phone platform. As you may have heard recently, iOS 7 now uses Bing for Siri search results. And Microsoft has always used Bing, so some of those enhancements and speed-ups are coming to our Windows phones as well. And apparently that doesn't require an update on the phone. That's automatic because that data is sent out onto the net and brought back to you. So it should be working, if not already, very soon. Also wanted to mention this report a vulnerability bounty program that Microsoft has come up with. It's a few different ones. Apparently three different ones. The first one is mitigation bypass bounty, and this is where Microsoft will pay up to $100,000 for someone who truly finds a novel exploitation technique against the protections built into the latest version of our OS. And they're talking about Windows 8.1 preview that comes out next week. So that's happening. Then there's the blue hat bonus for defense. Microsoft will pay up to $50,000 for defensive ideas that accompany a qualifying mitigation bypass submission. So if you have one for the mitigation one that's up to $100,000 and you provide the defense for it, your window for opportunity for money grows from $100,000 to $150,000. And then there's the specific Internet Explorer 11 preview bug bounty. And this is where Microsoft will pay up to $11,000 for critical vulnerabilities that affect Internet Explorer 11 preview on the latest version of Windows, which will be Windows 8.1 preview because Internet Explorer 11 is coming in 8.1. So that bounty program runs from the day it's released, June 26th, for 1 month until July 26th. So, Microsoft is putting their stuff out there. Expect to see a lot written about people banging on them, trying to find the vulnerabilities to get a piece of that money. It's better for security. There's no doubt about it. And so Microsoft's putting some big money behind the security efforts to make sure their software is secure and ready to go when it goes final. All right. Let's shift now to a little bit of focus on Google Reader, but yet away from Google Reader. As you might remember, July 1st is right around the corner. It's just 11, 12 days away. And July 1st is the cutoff date that Google announced back in March that they would cease having Google Reader as a service. So, there was a whole lot of blowing up and a whole lot of services got overwhelmed and tackled, all the people that were moving off of Google Reader. Things have settled down a little bit. It looks like to me there are three primary players in this. One is Feedly. Now, Feedly always operated with a browser extension in Chrome, and it worked well. It looks a lot. You even got a theme that's called Google Reader, so you can read, look, using titles in Google Reader format. I was testing it out, alongside of doing my, still using Google Reader. But so it seemed okay, had some growing pains, but they've now released their cloud. It came available yesterday. Yesterday was a big news day, the 19th of June. the so that it's now cloud-based. So they have cut the cord, per se. Now with this release, when you log into Feedly Cloud, which is at cloud.feedly.com, and you do that login with your Google credentials, it transports all of your feeds, your last 1,000 saved items or tagged items, into your Feedly Cloud account and severs the connection to Google Reader. So every future update, every time you go read Feedly, no matter what source or means you go do it, you are getting it from the Feedly Cloud. That means your connection to Google Reader is history. So if you've made that transition already, good on you. You're free of Google Reader at least about 2 weeks out from its cutoff date of 1 July. Now, the great thing for Windows Phone and Windows 8 users is that what I think is one of the best Google Reader products on our platforms is NG Reader. They've now released a beta for Windows Phone last night and Windows 8 today, and that allows us to cut over from Google Reader to the Feedly Cloud. And so it's pretty straightforward, pretty easy to get it going, and it's a familiar territory because the UI is just like it was in NG Reader when you were accessing Google Reader. Same process for saving things. Now the guys at NG Reader have told me they are going to implement buffer support probably next month sometime, but their primary goal right now is to get a final released app in both the Windows Phone Store and the Windows Store. You know, as the Google Reader cutoff happens, it's right now those are in private beta. And it is interesting, you know, the Windows Phone beta, they just need your email address. They enter it in at the developer portal, and you get an email with the link, and you're authorized to install the beta. On Windows 8, you got to go through getting a developer license installed through PowerShell. You have to then receive the file and install it from a PowerShell script. And it is extremely painful to get the beta installed on Windows 8 just for everyday users. So I told NG Reader via Twitter, I said, don't you wish that was easier? And they undoubtedly said, oh, you don't know how much of a challenge that is. So maybe someday we'll see beta process on the Windows 8 or the Windows Store side work as well as the Windows Phone does. But beyond that, NG Reader is in beta right now for Feedly on both the desktop Surface RT platforms and also on the Windows Phone. The other two big players, I think, the second one would be Dig Reader. There's an updated post about the development of that. And so if you're interested, you can take a look at that. It looks like that's going to be some type of a freemium type deal, it said in a blog post, but that the basic features will be free. Not sure about that. I'm tickled to death to have NG Reader and Feedly, okay? I am not interested in the other platforms because I'm going to be able to do my thing with what I have. But for some, Dig Reader might work. So you can go read that update. The other one is NewsBlur. Very active on Twitter over the last several days, talking to a lot of folks about the transition. NewsBlur is probably the one that had the biggest battering when people started to leave Google Reader back in March. I think the dev has gotten out ahead of it now and is slowly but surely kind of knocking out enhancements and tweaks to the system to make it more efficient. But very active on Twitter. So if you're interested in NewsBlur and taking a look at how they offer things, which I really do like the stats and the measurements they provide on their main page for NewsBlur, make sure you hit them up on Twitter. I'll put a link on the show page so you can contact them as well. And then, of course, earlier today, Facebook had their special little coffee with journalists this morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time, where they revealed the fact that Instagram is now going to have a video feature. It's 15-second videos. There are 13 filters to put over top of your videos, and as well as a cover frame that you can choose to frame it with, and a software enhancement for stability called Cinema. They did reveal that they have 130 million users, so a lot of people are using Instagram. From the Windows Phone side, they didn't say a word, not a peep. However, I'm happy to say that I've been watching on Twitter, and Daniel Gary, he's the developer that developed Instance. It used to be called Instagraph. Now it's called Instance, which is our ability to get onto Instagram on the Windows Phone platform. That works great. He's already tested the ability to see the videos and play the videos in the app. He's now working on the video generation and editing piece of it. So it's very possible that unofficially us Windows Phone users will have the ability to be able to share those videos and go from there. Now they're a little bit longer. I'm not sure what this is going to mean for Vine, because if you're an Instagrammer, which you can share to Twitter, you know, would you not just go ahead and use the video in the same app? I think this might be a little bit of trouble for Vine and Twitter, but we'll have to watch and see that. And by the way, that story that I'm going to reference you to is from TechCrunch, but when did this Twitter account called TechCrunch Onion come to be? You may be familiar with the Onion News Network. They do very sarcastic and tongue-in-cheek stories about current stuff going on in the world. And you have to be very careful, because they have caught people in high places thinking their stories are real. Well, apparently someone is trying to duplicate that with this account called TechCrunch Onion. So I followed it on Twitter. It's one I'm going to have to keep an eye on. And that might be fun to watch. Okay. The last item I want to share with you is a story we published earlier this week. Sometime in April, we mentioned that there was some information that looked like Microsoft was coming to Jacksonville, Florida, my hometown, to open a Microsoft store. There was nothing confirmed from the company, but we did see some evidence in building permits and some other stuff that led the local papers here to report and the local business journals to report that Microsoft was coming. Well, we got another kind of confirmation this past week, thanks to my friend Caprica on Twitter, that showed that the job listings are now out for the Microsoft store that's coming to Jacksonville, Florida. And they're advertising 7 different positions, from store manager, store assistant manager, product manager, product control. They're also seeking applications for their community development specialist, so somebody who does the outreach and community stuff. So it does look like we are getting this Microsoft store. They're certainly taking applications for the different positions, but there's still no word on when we might see this store, although if they've been building on it for a month or so and doing the renovation work, though I have not been out to the area where it's supposed to be coming, I may have to just make a visit out there and check out the building and see what kind of state it's in and how far along the road it is. But it does look like we are certainly going to get that Microsoft store now here in Jacksonville, Florida. So that'll be great for all us Microsoft fans. And you know that Windows Observer will be there in the form of me to cover that opening. And so we're looking forward to it. I mean, it'll be really nice to have that store here in Jacksonville. So there you go. Episode 95, just 5 to go to episode 100. Don't forget about our giveaway of the Xbox 360 wireless speed wheel. Make sure you go to that page and check out the Twitter info that you need to share with everybody in order to get enrolled and registered for the giveaway. And just one last reminder that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. So check out techpodcast.com. And we will see you next week, which will be another very busy week in the Microsoft world, because we finally get to see that preview of Windows 8.1, otherwise used to be known as Windows Blue. And we will do an installation, and maybe we'll even have that in front of us on our Surface RT, and we will talk about it during the podcast. So until next week, keep your computer up to date and stay safe on the net. Take care.